Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Then She Did, A Quest for More. Hi, Erin.
Hello.
How are you doing today in your closet recording office?
Oh, my gosh. I am doing fine. But we were watching a read-through of Community on YouTube this week, and the narrator was in his closet.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And it was, I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, he had like a professional microphone, but he also had earbuds in, and you could see all of his clothes behind him. And I was like, see, it's a thing.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, it's great. Yeah. I think it's great sound buffering, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
For those of you who don't live with sound people, get in your closets. Yeah. Start your podcasting. Closet. What are you waiting for? You don't need all of this fancy stuff. So I noticed today when I sent you two poems to read, and you sent me your new newsletter at the exact same time. Did you notice that?
Are you serious? I did not notice that.
I think they were like 5 minutes apart, but like I hadn't, like it popped up right as I had sent it to you, and I was like, oh my God.
That is so funny. Yes, your poems were great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for reading them.
Oh my gosh. It was a pleasure to read. I can tell whatever class that you're taking right now is like, or is it the time period that we're in? But like, they just are so you.
And no, I feel so free. I don't know what it is. Like, I just feel like I could.
Well, it's coming through on the page for sure.
Good, good, good. Yeah. And you finally got a newsletter out.
Oh my God.
That sounded bad. That sounded critical. I didn't mean it to sound critical.
No, I meant like, oh my God, it took forever. Like I was so out of practice and telling the truth. Like I had a draft and then I was laying in bed and I'm like, that's not exactly the truth there. I mean, it's part of it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go back. And it took forever. And I mean, it was like over 900 words. And that was just like pulling teeth. But then once it was done, I was like, oh my gosh, I have an idea for another one and another one. And I have to say that the people that I interacted with that day, I was less irritable. And I think it's because I took my mind for a walk, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes, I do. I know. So, I feel too, like there's sometimes where I'm reluctant to get into stuff because you have so much stuff going on and you don't want to like, oh, I'm going to be distracted and annoyed because people are going to be interrupting me, blah, blah, blah. But usually if I'm like doing that, then it doesn't happen like that.
No.
Even if I get interrupted, I'm not super mad. I mean, I might just be like, I need 5 more minutes and then I'll come help you. But
right.
Yeah, I'm not as angry as I imagine I would be when I'm sitting there angry about having not done it. Like I'm angry because I'm not doing it.
But also like I wasn't angry, like things that would have normally made me angry didn't bother me as much that day. So I was like, okay, this is something I think I talked about it last week, that constant creative response that Elizabeth Gilbert was talking about. And I think there is something to that. I need to like walk my mind around a little bit, do a couple of laps on a regular basis. So I get the wiggles out of my brain and I spent less time on internet and like scrolling. And so that was good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Glennon had a good thing to say about that too this week when she was talking about there are times when we're writing and there are times when we're becoming the person that writes the next thing. So there are just some times where we're becoming and we're not necessarily writing.
Well, and I think in today's episode, we will, when we're talking about Emily's quest, I think you talk about that a little bit, that there are times where it just wasn't the right time.
Yes, for sure.
So listeners, if you are like, oh my gosh, I'm not writing anything, that is fine. This might be your time to like do the becoming part.
Yeah, right. It's just like trust that you're on that path. It's so hard to just be like gentle with yourself about that kind of stuff, I think.
Quite honestly, yes.
When you're like, I should be doing other things. But
right.
That's just always true, I think, right?
Right. You're going to have those other things. They'll still be there.
Yes.
They'll still be there. All right. So let's get into it.
All right. I sent you like a 4-page speech.
You did. And I loved it.
I was like, here's the speech I'm giving on my quest. Is this not what we do here?
This is what we're doing. So last week, if you didn't listen to last week, we talked about what my life looked like in the quest and like how it doesn't always look like how you perhaps envision that a quest would be on, you know, or what your quest, your life would be like. So it's kind of messy. And so now this week, we're going to hear Emily's version of her quest story.
Yes, and everyone should go back and listen to last week's episode, episode 16, because it was such a good conversation, and I think it's really helpful.
It really was like, I mean, not that our conversations aren't, some things were just so not planned, and like, it sounded just like us talking.
Yes. And this week I was like, I don't know what I'm going to, I don't even know what I'm going to say. Like, it's so like a lot, blah, blah, blah. And then I sat down and like wrote like 4 pages. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll just say this.
Oh, okay.
Told you. It was like freedom everywhere. Freedom coming out of all my pores.
So great.
But I was thinking, like, last week you started off by talking about how you always wanted more. And I was thinking, like, I would say the exact same thing, that I always wanted more. And it's kind of funny because we never really talked about that even when we were naming the podcast A Quest for More.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right?
Like, but we both knew the thing. We knew the feeling.
Right.
We just didn't have, like, we couldn't put a word around it, or like, we just weren't making that connection. I don't know.
Right. And like, we like more than what we have now, but like, right, this feeling, this general feeling of just like wanting more or knowing that there's more out there. And I was remembering, like, there's a Jane's Addiction song that has the line, because of this thing, because of this thing, because of this thing that's in me, is it not in you? Is it not your problem? And I always used to just like think like that always just reminded me of that more. It's like, do you not have this thing like that's like burning inside of you?
Right. Yes. I don't think everyone is tuned into, I think everyone has it, like we've talked about before, but maybe not everyone is ready to tune into that.
To go on their quest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am with you. That's pretty much how I felt the whole time I was growing up, was that like there was more out there, and that I was just like looking for more. And I was thinking too when I was writing this about like how tricky it is if you're writing. And maybe I'm just not looking at this complete picture, but like, so maybe if people are other kinds of artists, they can help us, give us some insight. But like, if you play an instrument or you dance or like you are have like an artist of some kind, like you have this actual skill that like truly other people can't really do. You know what I mean? Like, it's something you've learned or something that you're
right.
Like, but like, everyone can write and everyone has a story. So I think that really tripped me up in the beginning, because I felt like a lot of my life was just waiting for someone to come and say, like, yes, you are special and good. Like, come and do this. Mm. And like, I honestly had no idea I was like special and good enough. Like, that was not a thing that, you know, I don't know. I just never felt like all this writing I did, all these writing classes I did, whatever, whatever. Like, we started like a literary magazine in high school. Like, I was like the student leader. I never submitted anything to it. I was like the editor of it or whatever. And like, no one did submit. Like, I didn't publish. I was like, well, no, I'm not going to like.
And it's, you're like, no, that's not for me. I'm just doing the thing without doing the thing.
I know. And it's so stupid, because it's not like I didn't have like pieces of my writing. Like, here, I'd like to share Emily's, because it was so like, whatever. Like, you know, like, it's not right. That I didn't have writing that was singled out in certain circles. So it's like, then I just think, like, really, what would it have taken for me to like confirm that? So I don't know. I was like, I was just waiting for someone to like tell me like I had this special magic sauce. But like, as I was writing this, I was thinking, like, the truth is, like, one, I already had the magic. Like, the magic was already there. Uh-huh, and two, magic has nothing to do with it, really. So that's the thing. Like, or the magic is different than we think, right? Like, it's not just this, like, unbridled raw talent that, like, I'm waiting for someone to acknowledge. It's, like, the practice and the persistence of not letting go of the thing.
Right. I think that is so true. It's not just the thing. It's not just whatever your talent is or whatever. That is part of it. But the other part of it is like the persistence of it and tuning out like the outside influences that tell you, the outside resistance is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Because there are a lot of people who just keep going, even though maybe they've even faced failure, they've gotten turned down, and they just keep going, and it doesn't matter. Like, eventually, right. Eventually, through the persistence, they become good enough, even if they weren't good enough in the beginning. So, yeah, that I wanted to talk about that because I feel like I still struggle with that. I mean, that's like definitely one of the biggest struggles for me in the quest is just like, how many people will it take to tell me I'm good enough, right? Like, it's this black hole of just like me going from teacher to teacher to teacher so they could acknowledge like, yes, you can do it, but like, why am I doing that? And what would ever have been enough to convince me of that?
This is interesting because it kind of sounds like you were looking for the point of entry, like, or the threshold. To me, this sounds like what would have convinced me. I'm searching, but like you were looking externally rather than internally. That's what I mean. Cause I think we talked about this last week too, was like how, like, was there a different points you could jump in? And it definitely looked like you were looking for that.
Yes. And it was like, there were all these doors, like, here, how about this one? No, I don't know. Is this, I don't know if I can go through that door. Can I go through it? I need someone to tell me I can. Like, as if there were all these gatekeepers.
And right.
I don't think there were. I don't know. It's really strange because I don't consider myself like an insecure person. And I don't know if it's like insecure. I don't know. I don't really, I have to think about it more because I just try to like not do it now. It just doesn't mean the desire is gone.
Right. I mean, I wonder if there was something else like going on that, you know, maybe you like there was something subconscious going on. Obviously there was, but like, I wonder like if it had anything to do with, you know, like you're a five, right? And so like you're like, you want to make sure everything like is locked down and totally correct before you share it. And like, that is a killer of creativity.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like it has to be. And even what you said about your newsletter, like the amount of time you spent in like making sure it was true. Like that is where we like totally connect, you and I, like, you know, that this, we aren't willing to share things that aren't true in like the truest sense of true.
Right.
That deep, deep sense of true. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting as I was like thinking through this. Like last week when I asked you that Joseph Campbell quote about like what set you off on this quest, like did you, was something taken from you or did you just want these different experiences? And I said to you, like, I think something was taken from me and I think you were looking for different experiences and you were like, no, I don't think so. I think I like my voice was taken from me. And then as I was writing my notes, I was like, no, I was the one who was like, I want to experience all the things, like everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I wanted like out of the confines and out of definitions and I wanted to test everything and like every boundary. And I've just always been like that. Like I've never really been afraid of experiences. I wanted to know like everything firsthand. Like I just wanted to know.
Wow. So that sounds like a different sort of motivation than feeling like something was taken from you and you're trying to find, you just wanted to go out there and like live a big juicy life right from the get-go.
Yes. And like, it was so like always this thing that was like a negative about me, right? Like from like other people's perspectives. I was like, I want to know what happens if you shave your head. Like, what does that, like, how does that challenge my own perception of femininity?
Right.
Why well, is no one else interested in this experiment?
That's because no one wants to, like, because for lots of reasons. I think when you decide to, like, take a system and turn it, you know, and challenge it, I mean, first off, people, generally speaking, do not like to be challenged when it comes to those things because, one, it's uncomfortable, and two, you're holding a mirror up to, like, something inside of them that maybe they're not ready to, like,
right,
investigate and do some thinking about.
Yeah. Like if I had a penny for every time someone has said about like even just like short hair, right? Like, oh, I wish I were brave enough to cut my like, are you joking? It's just hair. Like just cut it off. Be brave right. enough to do it. It'll grow back. Like see what you think. Like, I mean, I'd be like a bazillionaire.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know how serious they are or not, but it's interesting that they always like couch that comment in like, I wish I was brave enough. As if like, so I don't think, I mean, that's not how I think of it. Like I'm doing this brave thing. Like I just want to see.
No, it's just an expression of you.
Yeah. Just want to see what this is like.
I think it's interesting though. And maybe you could talk a little bit more about like, so you want to go out and you want to live this juicy life. This is something that you just want to experience at all. But then there's like this block in the way where like you wouldn't submit to the literary magazine in high school or whatever.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I don't know. And maybe it has to do with like, maybe it does have to do with that, like things about me as a five, like, so like things about me as a five that are helpful to know and like would have been helpful to know before now is I mean, I'm kind of a loner. I mean, I guess I'm like totally a loner. Like I don't have a big friend group. I never have. I have a few really close friends, but even then, like, I mean, I have like people I hang out with a lot, but like, and I have people I consider like deep soul friends, but like, I don't necessarily talk to them on the regular. But that doesn't mean I don't feel like they're not like my best friend.
A connection.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have that like group of people who are like my sort of soul connection friends, but I'm like private. So here's the thing, right? It's like I'm a very private person, but I'm also like this total open book. So I've always used sort of oversharing as a way of guarding my privacy in terms of my inner world. So I think not submitting has to do with that in a lot of
like
ways.
Like guarding your inner world, because if you were to share something like that personal.
Right. Or like, what if I shared something and it was wrong? Or or like it was like a clue to me that I didn't understand I was giving to people. I don't know.
That's interesting. Because like, first like of all, horcrux. When you say,
yes,
when you're private, but then you overshare, I mean, that is just, those are two opposite things.
It's so
and
stupid.
Here they are.
I know. It's like weirdest thing about fives, I think. And people would always tell me that, like, you're so, like, you never tell. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I tell you everything. And they're like, no, you don't. You don't tell us, like, the real stuff. And I'm like, I don't even know what you mean. Like, I went on a date. I will tell you everything that happened. But, like, they're like, no, you're not. And I was like, yes, I am telling you everything that happened. I don't know. It's weird, right? Like, I'm not. It was like, I don't know. I was not sharing the real stuff, I guess. But, like,
so you're sharing like surface stuff.
I guess. I don't know.
Interesting.
I know. It's really weird. So yeah, it's, and it took me a long time to understand oversharing as like that's not a good thing.
Like oversharing as a way to deflect, like to throw someone off the scent that they are like not, that you're not really giving them the real story.
Or that like oversharing is not the same as being honest.
Or intimate.
Or intimate. Right. Right. Or truthful. Like it's. And I think it was like all those shortcuts to intimacy, I think I'm like a pro at. And maybe all fives are, because like how else do you get there? Like we're five.
Right.
Be like, I don't know how else you get there. Let me just tell you. I mean, like all five Enneagram memes are all like, you know, like like you saying really deep, inappropriate things in like light social situations. Like, let me see who bites on this, and that person I will spend the rest of the evening with.
That's really funny.
I know. So, yeah. So I don't know. I think it, I don't know. I have to think more about that because it's still something that I struggle with in terms of like sharing my work and, but yeah, I think it might have something to do with that inner world. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that your Enneagram type is definitely a clue, but I think, I mean, and I know this because we're friends, but like, I wonder if there had been some circumstances growing up that perhaps like kind of created this sort of dichotomy in expressing yourself, sharing, but not sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I have the answer to that yet. Okay. The other thing you should know about me as a five before we move on is that I do not like to depend on anyone but myself. Like, I hate it.
Yes. And sharing is part of, sharing is part of like, what am I trying to say?
Like a relationship.
Right. And sharing is, you will be receiving something after you share something. So maybe it's, that has something to do with it as well.
Oh, yeah, right. Probably. It feels really sticky to me already. Just you saying that feels like a really sticky situation. Like, I don't know.
Oh, so that might be it.
I don't know if we want to go there.
yes. Okay. You lead the way.
That's so funny. Yeah. So.
So tell me more about what, like, because you're also a four wing.
Yeah. So, yeah. So like there's, I'm that weird five wing four subtype that's also always looking for like that someone to connect with on that deeper level. So like, this is definitely part of my quest. Like it's part of like my life goal, right? Is like finding these people with the spark, like people who have that sort of magic alive in them. It's just my favorite, absolute favorite thing. And I think, I mean, maybe all fives, but I might be a spark vampire. Like, the way, you know, like extroverts feed off of everyone's energy. Yeah, that might be me. And it occurred to me as I was writing this, this is why I love being in classes, Erin. I figured it out. Because that's where those people are. And it, even if like they're all, I mean, usually all the people are interesting and like are trying to share or tell their story in some kind of way. But there are usually only like three or four maybe in the class, including the instructor, yeah. Right? Who are like,
right,
have the magic spark. And it's just, yeah, it does, it like keeps me alive. I just like love
that's
that.
That's interesting. Well, I think it's also interesting that there's a spark, you might be a spark vampire, but you also don't like to depend on anybody.
I know.
I love, you're so layered and there's so many,
so
like,
obnoxious.
The contradictions just are just so, like, just interesting and juicy and I love them.
Oh my God. It's, I think it's fives. I think we're like an anomaly. I mean,
you've said every time you listen to like anybody talking about a five, they're just kind of like gloss over it and don't give you like the satisfying answer that you're right. Craving.
Nobody can really understand these people. They're just like, I mean, everybody talks about fives going to seven in stress being the weirdest jump on the Enneagram in any of the jumps. Like, it's the weirdest, like, way people act, like, right, like to like go like become like partiers. Actually, someone posted right. This in the five group today, like, what do you look like if you're like out and you're drunk? And I was like, oh, angry and slutty. That's in whichever order.
That is really, oh my gosh,
that's also why I don't drink. Not very much. I do drink, but not a lot.
Right
Things get quickly out of hand is what I'm saying. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
You're like, it's not a good thing.
It's not. It's not a pretty scene. But yeah, it's That and the 5-wing-4 is also like this sort of sweet spot of like, if you can bridge like your 5 and your 4, it is like this sweet spot for like being able to like really understand like things and like be able to make them clear to other people, which is like also my goal, right? Or like my goal as a poet. So yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, back to my life path. So
yeah, how does this all?
Well, it's like this.
Tell us about your quest through this. Then
it's like this huge, big. I don't know what to call it, Erin. I don't want to say it's a detour because I don't think it was a detour.
What you mean, like what exactly?
There was no my path is this huge, giant loop. I think it's just like, or maybe it's just like the swirling. I don't know. But it's crazy. Well, it's long. It's not direct. I do a lot of weird. I make a lot of weird choices. Like it's not like.
Well, I think a detour sounds kind of like,
right.
I don't know, degrading, because like then
it's like a mistake. And I'm not saying
it's like a mistake.
Yeah,
but that's not what you're saying. What you're saying though is like you think you needed to like honor the steps where you were at. So like, I mean, it looks like you needed things and those are the decisions that led you to make that need know things led you to make decisions that perhaps were not linear. But to be honest, like, I think we talked about this last week. The quest is not linear.
That's true. It is not.
You said it best when it was like seasons. Like,
yes, it's true. I had so then I have like a multi-season. I've had a multi-season. I should have framed it that way. Why didn't I think about that? Yes, I'm like Grey's Anatomy. We're like, I'm like, this is season 24. a long running show. Right. So
what did life look like for you? Like
when
as
I was little,
then.
So I like had this typical life. Like I had, or even like my students used to say, like, you had one of those like storybook lives, didn't you? And I like, in a lot of ways I did. Like I had a stay at home mom. Our lives were filled with like imaginative play and books. And I was always like making up stories and playing with Lego or Barbie or writing stories or fake newspapers.
Stop. I had fake magazines. Oh my gosh.
I know. If only we had been friends there, we could have exchanged them. Oh my gosh. So I always say, and I think you say this, I have always said this too, which is so funny, but I've always said that whatever you wanted to be in second grade was your biggest clue for your quest. So in second grade, I wanted to be a writer and live in an RV and travel around and write. And that's still pretty much my entire life goal. In fact, when I wrote that sentence, I looked at my husband and I was like,
said that. Yes.
Should we just go get the RV and just go? Like, what are we don't have to be here, but like, I don't know where we would go. We can't really go anywhere.
Right.
But yes, that's still my goal.
No one really. Yeah. Right. Yes.
We bought my parents' RV. So it's like my happy place. And I'm like so close to my second grade life goal that it's just great. So believe, kids, you can do it. So I feel like people took me seriously, but I just didn't really know what to do. I think there's a lot of things about it. I think I'm the oldest child. I think I didn't have like examples, right? I didn't have anybody really leading the way for me. And I was going to say this before, like, too, I didn't have a way to make decisions. Like, seriously, at one point, I would just tell people, like, if it will make a funny story, I'll do it. Like, that was like my decision making rubric. Will this All make right. a funny story? Like, sure, I'll do it. Like, I'm in. So I didn't really have, I never really learned or never understood how to like have a goal and like move towards that in like an intentional way. And I mean, I still have trouble with that. Right. Like, so I think, I don't know, for whatever reason, like whether it's just that I was like the oldest or I don't know, but that part was hard for me. So I just didn't really ever like, I wasn't focused, right? Like I did like lots of stuff. I like played lots of instruments and took lots of classes and all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting because I, I've read a few biographies of writers who's talked about their parents wanting to be writers, and like their parents were unsuccessful writers. And I used to think like in my younger years, like my older son, like, oh, he'll probably end up being a writer because he's like watched me struggle through like just like sort of this writer life.
Right.
And I feel like it's like, so those kids grew up seeing their parents do this thing. And I think maybe that paves some of the way for them. We're going to have to maybe do another episode on this because I'm really interested in this idea of like if there's an easy on-ramp to your creative life. And because I want to be able to give my kids, right. Like if there is, I, you know, but I felt like I just didn't have any on-ramp. Right.
You didn't know what it looked like.
I didn't know what right. And then it's so weird because I did so much reading and I knew so much stuff. So it was like, it's not like I didn't have access or I didn't have the clues to move me forward.
Reading about it and seeing someone else live that life are two totally different things.
Yeah, right. Right.
I mean, you can read about whatever you want, but like, if you didn't see it happen, it's hard to imagine what that actually looks like.
And I feel like we have so much more access now. Like that was also like before social media or anything like that. So it's not, mm-hmm. we didn't have Anne Lamott like on Twitter being like, today sucked. I forced right. myself to sit in a chair for 45 minutes. Like I did good work today. Like if I had known that, like if I had known all it takes to be a writer is to sit in a chair for 45 minutes and write shit and then cross it off your list for the day. Like, oh, well, I probably was doing that.
Yeah, right.
I just didn't know that was how you did it. I thought you
know. No, because you know, see the process, you just see the published piece.
Right. Maybe that's why we're so fascinated with this, with the quest, what it looks like. Because it's so much easier when you know those things.
Yeah. And struggle doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's struggle is part of like the creative resistance. It's just, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong or you're not meant for that work. It just means that it's like the natural order of things. Things will be hard when you're trying to create.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that was my like a growing up life. I did have like I had some pretty serious like medical issues growing up. And so I was in and out of hospitals a lot. I also think that had a lot to do with me being like a loner. Like my mom had two other kids at home. Like I was just like in the hospital a lot by myself. And I mean, it was fine. Mm. But like, I think I just became super independent. You know, like it's just like
right.
very much on my own. And then I had
it could also be like some trauma being left alone in a hospital, like not intentionally, like your parents were trying to like,
right.
but you know, to have invasive medical issues and then be like that, that's a serious thing.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think there's like all like consequence to that, that I wish like in medical communities would consider, you know, I just don't think they mm-hmm. think about like later on, your kid might struggle with these issues. Like keep this in mind.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, we fixed her. It's fine now. And then I did have like I had some pretty significant like losses in my family, like growing up. My grandfather, who I was very close to, and I would like spend summers with my grandma and grandpa. He like died at 52, Aaron. Like,
oh, my God.
Came home from work. He like worked. He owned a gas station, service station. And he came home, mm-hmm. had lunch, went back and had a massive heart attack and died. 52, which becomes increasingly unbelievable, right? Like as the years go, mm-hmm. as I get closer and closer to 52, like it just becomes
right.
more and more unfathomable. I always say like my life would have been totally different if my grandfather had not passed away. Like it just, I just know that to be true. You know, like it was that significant. Yeah, it was really awful. And then I was 12 when that happened. And then just 2 years later, my middle brother, I have two younger brothers. My middle brother was hit by a car while riding his bike when he was 10. So I was 14 then, and he died a few days later. So, like, my life definitely takes, like, a turn at this juncture yeah. to become much more, like, I don't know, serious, but, like, much more It's like the quest became bigger or more intense, right? Like, it was like, this is my life. And it's like...
Well, I think that you saw mortality up close and personal and experienced it at a young age with people that you had deep connections with.
Yes. Yeah, right. Like, right. I mean, our dog that we had, like, that my older son and I got when he was, I don't know, probably 8 or something, you know, passed away a few years ago. And he was, I mean, devastated, but he was like, this is the closest thing I've had to me that's died. And I was like, are you serious? Like, I was like, oh my God, that's true. Like, I just couldn't even, I hadn't really thought about it. But like, to me, loss, to think that someone hadn't suffered this super tragic personal loss, you know, before like 22 seemed insane to me, you know, like, oh my God, people can go that long without knowing this kind of loss and grief. Like, I just thought that was part of everyone's, but it's not part of everyone's journey. So yeah, it's like, it's a weird thing because I don't talk about it a lot because it's just so sad and it's so hard to talk about. Like, nobody knows how to react to you when you say your 10-year-old brother was killed by a car. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things, like, what does somebody say? So, but it's been coming up more and more. We talked about this in a couple episodes ago when we talked about Onward. I started talking about it. And then in my class, Erin, I just started writing all these poems about grief. God. And it's like the last thing I ever wanted to write about. It was like, oh, fuck.
But it was a thing that needed to come up. And like, I'm listening to this story and I'm thinking about your fascinating dichotomies. And I wonder if you ever think about how this affected, you know, the loss of your grandfather and the loss of your brother and how that may have shaped your world where you don't share anything, but you share everything, but nothing, you know?
Yeah. Right.
How have you ever thought about the connections there?
I mean, it makes sense, right? Just because of like what I just said, like you can tell somebody that, but you can't really tell somebody that, you know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things where it's like, and it's one of those things like you, I felt like, and you never want to like say it. So like, you feel like people like you're saying it to like get attention. Like it's like such a tricky thing, but I also always, I can't say it. Like if somebody asks me like how many brothers I have, I can't say like I have one brother. I would never say that.
No.
Just like I would never say I have 2 kids. Like I have, just because there's the 2 you can see, like, oh, I always mention like, oh, I have an older, I have a third one who's not here. Like that just seems so weird to me. So. And then someone else.
No.
But
these 2 and another.
We won't talk about it. Right. Which is a whole nother subject, right? So like then.
Right.
Not long after that, at 18, I had a baby right after my first year of college. And I talked about.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I just want to like lay this out for you because I found this helpful when I was writing my memoir. These events that don't seem to connect or they seem super far away from each other.
Right. No.
Like as you experience it, like 4 years went by.
Right.
Only 4 years went by between the death of your brother and you becoming pregnant with your first son.
Yeah. No, I was like, for sure, like deep in trauma and grief. No question. There's no question.
But I'm sure, but you didn't see it then.
No, not at all. Uh-uh. No. I know. And then I talked about this in my Listen to Your Mother show. And it's funny because you talked last week about how you stopped journaling because moms don't journal.
Right.
And my whole piece was titled Moms Can't Have Shaved Heads and Other Myths. Because as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I started growing my hair out because I had buzzed my hair off before I went to college, which is the only time I thought my parents were seriously going to kick me out, which was funny because that was like minor.
Over a shaved, right.
I was like, are you kidding? This is what you're going to kick me out for? But they were so like, my mom was like, I want you to make friends in college. And I was like, well, if they don't want to be my friend because I have this hair, I don't want to be their friend. Like, just consider it a weeding out process, I guess.
Right.
yeah, so I thought like that was like the thing I would do to become like a mom, right? Is like grow my hair out and try to figure things out. And it, I was thinking too about, I had already taken a creative writing course my freshman year. I had somehow gotten into one. I always scheduled myself. So somehow I found this loophole and I had gotten into this creative writing course. And at the end of the semester, the professor like took me aside and told me he would sign me into like the next level course, even though I didn't have like the prereqs yet to get into it. But of course, I was leaving college and moving home to have a baby. So I wasn't able to do it. But I thought,
my gosh,
like there's such an interesting moment there of like the thing I'd been waiting for, which was like a teacher to be like, no, I see something in you. I want you to like come study more with me. And I was like, oh, sorry, I can't. I have to go do
this. That's insane. That would like when you ask about certain points of getting in, like right. That to me looks like a point that you could have, but you know, just wasn't meant to be at that time.
Right. That's what I mean. Like it's just this big, crazy swirly loop of a quest.
Just sidebar, when did you end up going back to Western?
No.
I
transferred to the University of Toledo after that.
I know. That's right.
Because we like miss each other there.
We miss each other there. Another point we could have met anyway.
That would have been so
continuing
weird.
That would have been so weird. I would not have been I was not a fully formed human that could have accepted someone as you as a friend.
In my combat boots and my shaved head. I was so cute, though. You would have been my friend.
No, you wouldn't have wanted to be friends with me, I think is what I'm trying to say.
No, I totally would have.
I don't know.
That's so funny. The other thing that happened that year at Western, too, it's like it's so weird because I don't have a whole lot of memories, but like Les Mis came to the theater at Western and I saw it like a few times. I think I ushered for a couple of performances and then I like won tickets from my Russian teacher. She had extra tickets and she raffled them off and it was one of those things where like I knew I was gonna win and then I won them. I love that one. I was like, yeah,
oh my god,
yes. I knew it. But the last line of Les Mis like is to love another person is to see the face of God, and I think that is really a point in my life where like that was like my driving principle from that point forward, right? Like I was going to have this baby because this was the whole point, right? This is the whole point to this whole gig is to like love people and like have this connection and like do good in this world. And so I think like a lot of my decisions after that are based on that idea, right? Like choosing love, which is going to come up again. Because interestingly enough, it's also an obstacle in your calling. So
it is.
When I found that out, I was like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. So after that, it's like I was a single mom.
It's kind of blurry there for a while.
Yeah, I got married, got divorced, had a baby and graduated, worked full time and went to school full time and graduated in 4 years. And that was...
Oh, my gosh.
That was that. I know.
I they should give you an asterisk on your diploma to say that you had all these major life events and did this in 4 years.
I know. I was a real pain in the ass when my son was in college because he was like, this sucks. It's so hard. And I was like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I had a 3.5-year-old when I was a junior in college. I can't really help you with that.
Yeah.
Must be really stressful what you're going through.
Yeah, right.
I had a slightly different experience. I don't know.
That's funny.
Sherry was like,
ugh. How many times do I have to hear the story?
I know. And then I met my husband now when I think my son was like 8 when we met, 8 or 9. He was 10, I think, when we got married. And then I have like my 2 younger kids. So in a lot of ways, it's like I've just been spinning my tires in this same sort of mom life phase for like, I don't know what, like 26 years. I've just been like primarily mom being the job title that is at the top.
At the top. Interesting.
But I kept like taking classes.
Right.
I ended up with like enough, like I could have been a creative writing major, but like my advisor was like, no, you're not. Like I had enough English credits that I could have been in either, like had a creative writing focus or a literature focus. Like I had just took as many classes as I could take. And he was like, no, you're not doing that. And that's another moment too, where I'm just like, why? Like I could have gone on to do like an MFA. Like I could have done that.
Yes. Yes.
But like, it wasn't, I think too, people had like my best, they had really good intentions for like my best future. And I understand that like getting an MFA as a single mom seems like a stupid choice, but like, I think it would have been okay.
You know? Well, I mean, I think that also, what am I trying to say here? Different points of entry, of course, but like if there was something like, I mean, you had someone that was depending on you for their well-being. And right. So like, I'm sure that factors into your decision here about, you know, the MFA versus yes. the literary and,
it's just like getting a job and getting insurance right. and all of that.
Yeah. Right. But like, I just want to like point out how incredible it is that through all of this huge upheaval of bringing children into the world and getting married and divorced and married, like you still stayed on true to like your creative writing dreams. Like you still, like you may not have thought about like where this was going to go, but like you still kept on taking the classes. And I think that says so much about like your desire to be a creative, you know, to be writing in the creative space that never detracted you.
Right. Right. I similar to you, like when I was on maternity leave, it was like, did we talk about this on the podcast or just did we talk about it? But like, I didn't even know blogs were a thing that existed until I was like on maternity leave. And then I was like, what is this thing people are doing? I had no idea. Like I was teaching and I had zero time, like I had newborns and zero time. And then like, so I found this whole thing and like, I don't really know the like exact path, but like somehow I ended up at like the Festival of Faith and Writing at Kelvin College, and this was probably 2012 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in like one of the sessions and she was like, here, we're going to do some timed writing. And she like got out, like she's like gave us like Natalie Goldberg's like rules for writing practice. And I was like,
oh yeah.
Oh, no. Like, I've taught this to every single student I've ever had. Like, we do this in class all the time. Like, this is the foundation of my life. And then it's like, oh, no, this is the foundation of a writer's life. And it was just like, I was like, whoa. It was this total moment where I was like, oh, I know how to do this. I've been doing it. Like, I'm not this person who doesn't know what I do know what I'm doing. Like, I've been doing
it. Yes.
And it was like this
total. Maybe it just didn't. It just didn't feel like it, maybe. Like, maybe it wasn't, like, what you perceived it to be, but right. you were doing it anyway.
Like, I didn't realize that's what, like, this is also what real writers are doing. It was, like, real uh-huh. writers and then, like, just people who, like, take writing classes. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But, yeah, so I started a blog for a while, but I just, like, I found my way back to poetry, which was amazing, and that was, like, just... It's really interesting because I feel like it's more than just like the writing I like to do, but it's like a deeper part of like who I am. Like it's essential to like my personal calling. And like that's how I think about it. It's not just like I want to be a poet, but like
right.
It's like I am a poet. Who like
yes.
And so like I would like to share these poems with other people.
Because that is who you are. I think that's so great. I am a poet, not that I want to be a poet. It's just essential to your right. and your person.
I always felt like that even in my academic writing. I mean, I always used to say like, "Oh no, I'm a poet who writes like literary analysis." Like because even my literary analysis papers, I would make as poetic as I could. Like It was like this fundamental part. But to tell people you're a poet, it's like telling people you're a magic fairy, like unless they're also poets, and then it seems normal. But like at the time, right. It seemed really weird to say. I didn't have this down, but like I also had this moment when I was a senior in college, and I think it was like a women's studies professor like took me and a couple other people aside, and she was like, especially since you're a single mom, like. I mean, I had totally planned on going on in academia and like getting a PhD and whatever. And she was just like, look, like you'll never get a job. Like people from Harvard can't get jobs, blah, blah, blah. And this is like a thing I've heard over and over and over again from like all levels of academia. And the thing is, like, it's not true. It's as true as it's true about everything else. Like, you will get a job if it's the thing you want to do. And like, as again, as well-intentioned as this woman was, uh-huh. And, you know, maybe like I can't say anything about it because maybe it would have taken me in this totally different path that like was not the right path or like whatever. But like, I don't know. It's just one of those things I like really caution students about all the time. Like, don't not pursue something because someone tells you you're not going to be able to get a job. Like, there are jobs. People are doing them.
Right.
Later on when I was getting my master's, like, my professor was like, oh, no, you would have gotten a job. And I was like, God damn it.
Well, and I think it goes
like, no,
to,
not
like...
you. You would have totally gotten a job.
And it's hard. I mean, but you had... It's hard to listen to yourself in that space because you're afraid and, like...
I'm on my own.
You were on your own with somebody with your son. Like, you weren't by yourself. Like, oh, I'll just like try this out and see right. how it works. And like, I'll just wait tables if it doesn't.
Right,
you know?
Right. I know. So, I mean, I did the best I could. I do know that.
I mean, I think you did better than your best, if that's possible, because I think so many people would have just been like, you know, this creative part of me, there's just no time or space for it. I have the, you know, like I'm a young mom. I'm, you know, I need to like provide for him. I need to provide for myself, but you didn't, you still stay true to who you are. And I really like, I want to like acknowledge, I hope that you can acknowledge that too, that that is a huge thing.
Yes.
Something to be proud of.
Thank you. I do. I mean, it's taken me a long time to realize like, oh no, I was doing this all along. So I want to talk about this, and I know we're like at like 50 minutes, but I just want to talk about, we won't talk about it forever, but I like, to me, this was so essential to like me understanding what was happening. So like, I always, when I'm talking about like personal calling, I always defer to like Paulo Coelho, who is like, who wrote The Alchemist, where he talks about personal calling or our personal legend, which I love. I just love that book so much.
Yes.
And, in the introduction to The Alchemist, he talks about why we don't have the courage to confront our own dream or like pursue our personal calling. And so when I read this, I was like, oh my God, like this is so totally what has happened to me on my quest. And it came just as at the right time where I needed to like figure that out. So at this moment, I had still like,
oh my gosh, is this the supernatural element to your quest story?
Yes, probably.
Because it came at the exact time that you needed it. Oh my gosh. Carry on.
I know, right? So unlike you, where you're like, I started a blog. Erin, I bought a blog. Like, I bought my web address and then sat on it for like a literal year. Did not write a thing. I didn't even open it.
Oh my gosh. That's because
I was
that
so
takes
afraid.
Some doing.
I was so afraid. I know, especially because I had spent a good amount of money on it. So it was like, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know if I was doing it right. There was also like this whole like dismissal, farewell culture of the internet that I was like, oh my God, what if I say the wrong thing? I was still sort of swirling in the outskirts of like American Christianity. And like, you know, it's like if you said the wrong thing, it was just a lot. So...
Gotcha.
I know. So there was a period of time where I was like recovering from that and learning to trust myself and trust my instincts and my integrity again.
And recovering from American Christianity.
Yes. And like,
yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I just want, like, I understood, I think, what you're talking about, but I want to make sure that the listeners understand that, like, that is something to be, that you were healing from a really big thing there.
Yes. I took, like, a really strange turn through, like, fundamental Christianity, which, like, at some point we'll talk about, but it was just, like, too much to include in this episode.
Yeah.
It's its whole own thing. But, yeah, I, like, first of all, I had to convince myself that that was real or, like, the truth. Mm-hmm. And then I had to, like, walk myself back out of that. And then, like, also forgive myself for, like, not trusting in my instincts and my... But, you know, like, in there is also where I, like, got my husband and my two kids, right? Like, there's things mm-hmm. I picked up along the way.
Right.
Like, in super intimate knowledge of the Bible, which has come in handy. Like, there's lots of things that I gained along the way that it's hard for me to think of it as just, like, this total wrong turn, but, like, it definitely...
Well, again, there is something probably to be, obviously, to be gained during those experiences, and I don't know if, like, you would be at this point now, right now, where you're able to talk about your grief and your poetry had you not experienced... like, if you had not regained the confidence of your own voice and your own intuition by being able to walk out of that situation.
Oh my God, that's a really good point. Yes.
So I'm very personally easy to be like, why am I like this? Why did this thing happen? Like, but truth to be told, if you hadn't had those experiences, you would not be here now being able to talk about your grief in a real, real way if you hadn't gained that confidence in that situation. And like, and healing is just like the quest. It's not linear. So.
Yes. Right. Exactly. So Paulo Coelho talks about like this, the four obstacles, and like the first obstacle is just like remembering our personal calling, right? That it gets deep, so deeply buried in our soul that we don't even know what it is. And, you know, often as a result of our, like, our childhood or our art scars, which I took, a course with Brené Brown, like right when she became like a thing, her and Oprah did this, like, put together this online course. And like part of that was all like about healing our art scars. And that was really helpful. So really, that's probably the thing that brought me back to poetry the most was that.
Oh, wow.
I know. I hadn't made that connection before. And then he says, so that's like the first obstacle is just like digging that back out. Like, oh, no, here's this ridiculous thing that I used to dream about. And people told me was stupid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second obstacle, Aaron, is love, right?
Oh my, like, God.
That we choose others over your own dream, like not pursuing what you want because you're afraid of what would happen or because that's not what moms do. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think I just was stalled here for a long time. And I think there's just so much in the world that says, like, right, like, love is the, like, it's the thing that I thought that was the thing I was doing, but that's not the thing I was doing. Like, that wasn't, it's part of my life, but it's not, my personal calling wasn't just like, love my kids.
Right, no. And, like, that's a burden, as we've discussed, for them to carry, your children to carry, when that is, you know, your...
Yes.
When you put your calling aside and then just focus all that energy onto them.
For sure. And he says, Paulo Coelho says, like, it takes us, like, all it takes is for us to realize that the people who love us, like, genuinely want us to experience happiness and pursue our dream. And in fact, they want to accompany us on the journey. And it's such, it's so interesting. It's like another one of those situations where it's like, it seems impossible, but all it requires is for you to let people into your dream and ask them for their support, and then, like, that can happen.
Like, but that goes against your nature of, like, not having to depend on anybody.
Oh yeah.
So I could understand why that would be really challenging for you.
Or, like, admitting that I have this, like, crazy dream of, like, no, I really want to be a poet. Like, right. But yeah, I think it's so true. Like, that's all it takes is to just, like, why would we ever think that the people who love us the most would be like, no, don't do that.
Well,
we can't afford for you to do that.
We need you here. You cannot be
We need
happy.
Your complete attention.
Well, I mean, it's complicated because then I think there's a lot of society messages there that leak in that
yes.
like don't even like that would be not something that you would take that risk to tell somebody because like what would that be to you as a mom then?
Yeah.
According to society.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of moms who wake up after this pandemic because I think there's a whole lot of moms who are like, oh no, I didn't need this much time with my kids. Like I didn't need, like, okay, I've fulfilled all of the like time with them that we could.
And also like when, I mean, this is like a sidebar, but like really it's not only just, I don't need this time, but it's also like, there also doesn't have to be that much time either. Like there's so many things to be done here that I don't need to be driving everybody anywhere. But anyway, it's another.
Exactly. Like you can, right. And that there is like, you can find that time, right? If you can't find the time mm-hmm. now, then time is not the problem. Like, right.
Right.
So like, right. If you, I think hopefully this will be a wake up call.
Unless
to a lot
you
of
have,
people.
Unless you have like young ones that
oh, yeah.
you have to keep an eye on constantly or a baby, that's a different phase of motherhood.
Yes. We yeah. always have that caveat. Like if you,
yeah.
and even not like, cause you and I both had like things happen when we had like newborns, but it's like, it's those toddler years I think that get really tricky.
Yeah. And more than one.
Right.
More than one makes it a little bit.
You can't like strap them into anything. Yeah.
Right.
So then once you like know your dream and you have your people behind you, then the third failure or the third obstacle is just like the fear of failure, which I definitely like that took me a long time to really, you know, go through it because and what he says is like, you know, once we've told people how much we want it to fail is devastating, right? Like if we've staked everything on this dream, if we've given our whole heart to it, even people know that. Then it's like, mm-hmm. it's awful.
Yeah. That, I mean, because you've put yourself out there and you have made yourself vulnerable and then to not reach whatever is your idea of success is, yeah, that is tough.
Yeah. And I mean, then if you, I think that's the other place where like read about people you admire and their life, because chances are they failed a ton of times. I think
correct.
Was it I think it was when Gwendolyn Brooks died a few years ago, I was reading, like she had submitted to poetry like for like 20 years before they
Oh my gosh.
I don't think it was quite time. It was almost 20 years. Yeah. Maybe 15, like before they published her poem. Like and it was so it's just like that kind of persistence of like mm-hmm. believing in yourself. And believing in what's inside of you and like just that you have something to share with the world,
right.
I think is just so amazing. And then the fourth obstacle, and this might be the worst part or the part I found really scary, but once you've, so like we found the dream, we've like nurtured it with love, we faced defeat and failure and suffering that we meet on the quest, like, right. Like we've gone through all those parts. And then we realize like what we want is right there waiting for us. And that's the fourth obstacle, like, which is the fear of realizing the dream. Like we're overcome with guilt about getting what we want.
Oh like, God. Yeah.
Why do we get to like,
who am I to be deserving of this? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it must be nice that you have all that time to write poetry. Right. We see people who have not achieved their dream. We decide we don't deserve it either. Mm-hmm. He says this is the moment people make stupid self-sabotaging mistakes. And he also says it's the most dangerous obstacle because it gives us a saintly aura, right? Like, I think this is where we can become the martyr, right? Like, we can renounce our dream and make this great, like, I just couldn't, it just was too much, like, with my kids
right.
and everything, right? Like,
yes. yes. And it feels very legitimate.
Yes. Yes.
And it's all self-sabotaging mistakes to
right.
often feel.
When you and I have talked about this obstacle a lot in terms of like, what would life look like? I mean, it is scary, right? Like, what would life look like if we get to the next step? And like, mm-hmm. what would we need to do to prepare for that? And like, how would that affect our families? Like, it's not like we aren't thinking about that. You know?
Right.
So I think that's a very real fear. I always think about when Brené Brown talks about how she realized she had like organized her life to remain small, right? Like,
yes.
Under the radar. Yes.
Yep. That's a great analogy, because I feel like that to play it small is really easy when you can just do a swan dive into like your daily task life.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I think it's so easy to get stuck. I can see why this is like the biggest obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you're like, this is it. I mean, this is the thing. It's right here.
Right.
Go ahead. Take it. I'm like, oh my God. So he ends with like my all-time favorite quote, which is why I wanted to include this, just because I love the steps. First of all, like, I just think those four obstacles, like, to me resonated so much with my life that I was like, oh my God, like, I've been through all of these. So then he says, this is what he says at the end: if you believe yourself worthy of the thing you fought so hard to get, then you become an instrument of God, you help the soul of the world, and you understand why you are here.
Oh,
I know.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I know. And that's like, that's why I got my worthy tattoo. Like, that's where I've been like just hanging out in this space, like to really understand that I'm worthy of this thing, right? Like, of the calling that I've been giving. It wasn't a mistake. Right.
And when you talk about it like this, all of the breadcrumbs are there. You have followed. It wasn't like you were like taking science classes and business classes and then was like, I might be a poet, which is told like that. Some people's story. I'm not saying that, but that
right.
was, I mean, you clearly were invested in your creative world since the beginning of time. So yes, you are worthy. I mean, it's what you're here to do.
Right. Like, even when I became a teacher, I was like, all right, like if I'm not gonna become an academic, like I'll at least I just want to be able to read and write every day. Right. And that's why I became a high school teacher, a high school English teacher. Like I was like, I just need to be in this world all the time. And it is like what I did, right, for a long time. So yes, I mean, that is true. I have never veered far from the path, I suppose. It's just strange. It's just led to weird places I did not anticipate, Aaron. And I'm trying to embrace them.
The quest is never linear.
Right. It's like that, right, in those, you know, like in the Grey's Anatomy seasons where like she's really out of things to write about. So like she kills out, like something really bizarre happens. You're like, why would anyone write, like take this plot turn? This is so stupid. That's how I feel about it. It's like season 12 of my life was a really big leap.
Well,
it was a really strange plot twist.
But I mean, you also, I think when you're on the quest, you know, it's becomes critical for you then to heal. And
yes.
I feel like you have a lot of things, deep, painful things to heal from and are healing from them. But, and I think when you say you took these turns, and these weird like plot twists, but like maybe that was all in an attempt to find some healing and all of those things were necessary in order for you to be here taking this new poetry class that is now producing like the real essence of you on the page.
Oh my gosh. It's producing something. Yeah. There's something too about like when you look at it from this perspective, it's also just like stop being so melodramatic about it at all. Right. Like it's like just write some poems. This is what you're put on the earth to do. Just like write some poems already. You don't need to do all this like wringing of the hands. It's just not that big of a deal. Just go ahead and do it.
And if you're wrong, you're wrong. But like also it's poetry. It's subjective. Is there really a wrong? I mean, there's better ways to do it. I'm sure. I'm not a poet. But like, is it really wrong?
Right.
You know,
I know.
Who's to say?
No. No. And like, I mean, I had a poetry teacher who was like, the worst thing that's going to happen is you will have written out your life. Right? Like,
right.
That's the worst case scenario is you will have spent your life documenting your life in poetry. That's not a bad outcome at the end of the day. Like,
correct.
Whether you're acknowledged or not is not really the point. The point is to just like write, to write out your life in this way or do whatever it is that you're doing.
Right.
Whatever your poetry is, that your personal calling. Yeah. So that's my quest, Erin.
Emily, your quest is fascinating. Oh, I'm never not fascinated by listening to you talk. In fact, I could have just like never interjected and just been like, tell me more.
So much. I know we're at like an hour and 10 minutes and they're like, we're okay. So much we haven't even talked about. We'll get into it. I promise.
We'll get into it.
It'll be in future episodes, I'm sure. But yeah, that was like the quick Emily quest. But you're right. It is true. Like I have never veered far off of my quest route. It's just lots of seasons of it. Lots of kids.
Well.
It's like, sure, let's just start all this over again. That seems like a fun thing to do.
Well, it is all meant to, like, it was all meant to be.
It's true.
It was all meant to be.
It's very true.
Well, thank you for sharing your lovely quest story with us.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for listening, everybody. I really hope that you will share some of your quest stories with us. And Erin, I remembered today that we have a phone number. It's on our Facebook page. I don't know off the top of my head, but people can call us and tell us about their quest and leave us messages. That would be super fun.
Oh my gosh. Please, please, someone call in. That would be great.
Yes. And let us know if we can share you with everybody or share your story and include your number and we can call you back. That'd be super fun.
So much fun.
Because I think there are going to be lots of people who are like, oh my God, I remember this thing that I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's in there.
It's in there. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. And you can follow us at Then She Did Pod and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And now we have a phone number that we forgot about. That go to our Facebook page. And you can also email us at thenshedidpod@gmail.com.
Yes. Let us know how you're doing. Let us know where you are, if you've encountered these four obstacles.
Yes. Or, and like, if there's any interesting points on your quest that you'd like to share, we're all ears.
We are. It's our favorite topic, as you can tell.
Okay. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
All right. Bye.